The best in Bitcoin made audible. You're listening to Bitcoin Audible with Guy Swan. What's up, guys? Welcome back to Bitcoin Audible. If you guys haven't heard, I got mentioned. Thank you all to everyone who shared it out and mentioned it in the thread. But I made it in the list of Crypto 2020 podcast on Tatiana's Forbes article, and that's pretty exciting. I'm pretty jacked about that. I'm proud, and honest to God, it wouldn't have been without all of y'all saying Bitcoin Audible that would have happened. So much love for that. That's pretty amazing. It makes me feel good. We are reading about the Lightning Network today, another one by Roy Scheinfeld, who is the head of Breeze Dot Technology, and the wallet that I talk about all the time because I use it constantly, the Breeze wallet. It is literally my go-to for Lightning lately. And this one's just a really cool piece on comparing the Lightning Network and the internet. And I think this will be really, really fun to explore and present a lot of fun discussion. And just something to keep an ear out for this weekend and early next week. We are going to redo the bullish case for Bitcoin because it is time. And I think there's a lot of new people coming in. And that's such a quintessential piece for understanding the entire place and role that Bitcoin plays in this global change that's happening. So we're going to be doing that again soon. And if you haven't listened to it, you got to. It's absolutely essential. So subscribe to Bitcoin Audible. A quick shout out to the guys supporting this show. First, Swan Bitcoin. Go to swanbitcoin.com/guy. They are the lowest cost way to get into Bitcoin and also the best. There's no noise. Like, God, it's so nice. I got another one earlier this week that just says you bought $50 worth of Bitcoin. It is just so comforting to know that I'm always stacking Bitcoin. You set it once and forget it, and it buys every day, every week, every paycheck, every month, whatever it is you want. SwanBitcoin.com/guy will also get you $10 free to start off with your Bitcoin savings plan. So don't forget to check that out. But with that, let's go ahead and jump into the show, the read for today by Roy Scheinfeld of the Breeze Technology Lightning Service. Comparing two revolutionary networks, Lightning and the Internet. Virtually every epistemologist from Aristotle, 4th century BC, to Kant, 18th century CE, agrees that we learn by categorizing and comparing things in the world. Want to compare apples and oranges? Go ahead. The question is not whether they can be compared, but what we can learn from a comparison. Oranges are juicy, sectioned, thick-peeled, native to China. Apples are crunchy, classic pie filling, thin peel, native to Kazakhstan. But together they are both fruits. They're healthy, they're good for jam, and they're sweet and sour. And they said it couldn't be done. Even though the Lightning Network is a human invention, we still know surprisingly little about it. How does the number of LSPs required vary with the number of users? How does the graph's complexity relate to the network's throughput? When will mass adoption happen? What does a Bitcoin-based Lightning economy look like? How will this technology transform the markets and societies we know? We are fortunate that another network has been using technology to transform societies around the world, bringing people together, making us more efficient, and giving us all opportunities we've never had before. That network, of course, is the mother of them all, the Internet. Maybe the features and development of the Internet can help us learn about where the Lightning Network is going, what it needs, and what we can do. It all started with an idea. Both the internet and Lightning were first described conceptually before they were ever built. We have J.C.R. Licklider to thank for the first articulation of the internet, which he dubbed the Intergalactic Computer Network in 1962. Who do I talk to about bringing that awesome name back? He foresaw, quote, a globally interconnected set of computers through which everyone could quickly access data and programs from any site, end quote. The Lightning equivalent would be, perhaps counterintuitively, the original Bitcoin white paper. This is the best comparison because Licklider was talking about infrastructure, a technician's network, rather than a tool for mass utility. He described it in terms of compilers, sublanguages, and time-sharing protocols, connecting at least, quote, four large computers, i.e. hubs. He was describing the network infrastructure, not the user-oriented internet as we know it. Similarly, even though Nakamoto explicitly described Bitcoin as, quote, a purely peer-to-peer version of electronic cash to allow online payments, things haven't turned out that way. Instead, due to the constraints of the blockchain, Bitcoin has so far served more as digital gold, a store of value, than the peer-to-peer cash it was supposed to become. But without Bitcoin as a solid foundation, there would be no Lightning. Then came the Kona Shinty. For the next couple of decades after Licklider's first paper, many people and institutions were working hard to convert his idea into technology. The first wide area network went live in 1965, with the first host-to-host message 4 years later. Crucially, TCP/IP, the internet's underlying transmission protocol, was tested in 1975 and was adopted as the DARPA standard in 1980. The infrastructure of the internet was growing as well. It was rapidly spreading to college campuses in Europe and North America. The network of subsea cables was growing, and national standards agencies were conferring and converging with each other. Still, hardly anyone was actually using the internet. It was effectively restricted to developers, researchers, techies, experts. There were two reasons for this. One, most communication among these Kona Shinty proceeded via RFCs, memos generally relating to the operation of the network itself, shared via FTP. This is a far cry from dragging and dropping any kind of media on a touchscreen. And two, the quality and quantity of available hardware was lacking. In terms of quality, quote, when desktop computers first appeared, it was thought by some that TCP/IP was too big and complex to run on a personal computer, end quote. Sound familiar? Like the problem with mobile full nodes? And in terms of quantity, fewer than 10% of American households had a PC in the mid-80s. Forget the rest of the world. This is roughly equivalent to the state of Lightning today. Think about it. While smartphones are much more common than PCs were in the early 1980s, they're still not able to run full Lightning nodes. However, PCs overcame the TCP/IP obstacle within a few years. So why shouldn't full nodes go mobile soon? Similarly, we are still a Lightning community about the size of a small town. Most of us know each other, and we discuss Lightning among ourselves over expert channels like GitHub, which is effectively a reincarnation of the RFC message boards. Most people have never heard of Lightning, let alone ever used it. We have a functioning network and a solid fundamental protocol, but the revolution has yet to come. Tech gaps and a killer use case. The first step in making the internet into a mass phenomenon came in the early 1990s, when Tim Berners-Lee developed and released HTML. This transformed the internet from a text-based medium into an open media medium, HTML was and largely remains the experiential DNA of the World Wide Web. Along with HTML, Berners-Lee and Nicola Pello simultaneously pioneered the internet's killer app, the web browser. The web browser obliterated the barriers to entry. It was a point-and-click interface that let users take part in the technology without having to worry about its underlying protocols. Instead of experts transferring datasets and draft protocols via FTP, people could suddenly order pizza from a clickable interface on their PCs. Internet use exploded. Unsurprisingly, it spread first in high-income countries, later throughout the world. If you build it to be easy and useful, they will come. So, what's Lightning's killer app? Lightning is a payment network based on Bitcoin. So the killer app would have to take Bitcoin further by making it cheaper, easier, faster, and more intuitive to use without compromising its technological integrity. That means a seamless UX and a private, peer-to-peer, secure, decentralized, true-to-Bitcoin foundation. We've already taken some huge steps down that very long road. Another similarity at this stage is the rise of service providers. From the 1980s to the 1990s, ISPs evolved from basically email interchanges to access platforms offering a range of services, like dial-up connections, branded chat rooms and publications, and help getting set up. We're also seeing the rise of Lightning service providers now, like Bitrefill, SparkSwap, Olympus, and Breeze, among others. They provide a range of services to help users get connected and to make the most of the technology. So where's the mass adoption? Perhaps what's missing is the killer use case to induce network effects on a geometric scale. I mean, of course, everyone already has to make and receive payments, and good, user-friendly apps are in place. But Lightning is easy to avoid. Journalists write self-experimentation columns on the experience of living on Lightning and Bitcoin in various places. It's still exotic. It's news. The killer use case could come from a currently adjunct function of Lightning, evolving to become a primary use case with broad appeal, like private messaging. It could come from a microeconomic decision of a global retailer. Or it could come from a macroeconomic shock that increases the salience of Bitcoin's superiority. Bitcoin will irrevocably replace, or at least join, fiat as the world's preferred medium of exchange. We just can't really predict which snowflake will start the avalanche and when. Empowering the people, altering reality. The next great leap can be dated to about 2006. That was the year when Google bought YouTube, making it a regular web appliance. Facebook opened its membership to all the world's adults and teenagers, and Time magazine declared you to be the person of the year. The web had officially entered its adolescence, or as we call it back then, the era of Web 2.0. Lightning could also promote an economy focused on individuals. Within our lifetimes, all payments in the economy could go peer-to-peer. Crowdfunding could replace investment banking. There would be no more inflation to evaporate public debt and private savings. Individuals would vary in the quantity of Bitcoin at their disposal, but they would no longer vary in the quality of their participation in the economy. Everybody on a level playing field. And everybody playing with the same equipment. No less important than Web 2.0, smartphones also went mainstream in 2006, with ubiquitous BlackBerries, popular Nokias, and impending iPhones. Until 2006, we experienced the internet in a box on a desk that we left behind and returned to consciously. Since 2006, the internet has been with us everywhere, and we have been a part of it. Instead of just a utility, it has become part of the fabric of reality. Lightning is a long way away from being taken for granted, and it's hard to imagine what that would look like. An analogy might help. Here is what a Canadian dollar bill looked like in 1954. And here is what the last two versions of the $20 bill looked like. Yes, that's the same woman, Her Majesty Liz II, on all three bills spanning 65 years. And it's the same in much of the rest of the Commonwealth. In other words, nearly a third of the world's population can't remember what money looks like without her face on it. For 2.25 billion people, and for three generations, Queen Elizabeth has been the face of money, and the thought of not having her face in their wallets is weird. To achieve something comparable, Lightning would have to be more than just the preferred payment method, but also the natural form of money. Using anything else would seem weird. That's two steps beyond mass adoption and one step beyond mass acceptance. It's mass identification when billions of people integrate Lightning into the furniture of their reality, like traffic lights and comfort foods. Recap. So, what have we learned from comparing the development of Lightning with the history of the internet? Quite a bit, actually. For example, 1. Lightning has already come a long way in realizing Nakamoto's vision for Bitcoin. 2. The necessary shift of focus from mere technical possibility to UX optimization is well underway. 3. We are still waiting for the killer app or killer use case to induce geometric network effects. Both positive and negative shocks are plausible catalysts. And 4. Mass adoption might just be an intermediate goal, not the final one. Perhaps Lightning's true destination and destiny is a world in which we have to explain to our kids what banks and inflation were, and how we ever moved money without Lightning. All right. Great little article comparing the internet to Lightning, two revolutionary networks by Roy Scheinfeld. Again, guy who is in charge of the Breeze wallet and Lightning service. Still, again, my favorite wallet out there to date. I am loving the Zap wallet, though, now that I've connected that to my BTC Pay server. In fact, I can't believe I've been sending money back and forth between the two, but I don't have a channel between them. So I should probably go ahead and do that, get a big channel, big fat channel between my two wallets. So I want to talk about this and what I think about the future of Lightning. And let me get another drink real quick. We'll go ahead and get our sponsor, and then we will jump in and I'll give my guy's take on Lightning and the Internet by Roy Scheinfeld. So I thought this was a really great piece because I kind of see Lightning as the, in some ways, the HTML moment of Bitcoin, because it's what is taking the assurances of Bitcoin and extending it and potentially scaling it to almost any other application, because the ubiquity, or not the ubiquity, that's not the word, the broadness with which you can use an HTLC, like all of the supposed limitations of the Bitcoin base layer, Lightning really doesn't have it, and the speed of development on Lightning is unbelievable. And now with LSAT and the ability to authenticate with a Lightning wallet or using a Lightning public key, I think we're beginning to see the realization, or we're beginning to realize so much of what Bitcoin's potential truly is. But we are also having to bootstrap a new liquidity network because of how Lightning works. It is a different protocol from Bitcoin. And interestingly enough, It's funny that he actually points out about the white paper being, you know, Bitcoin is a peer-to-peer electronic cash. And in a funny way, Bitcoin kind of wasn't quite that. And Lightning technically is more peer-to-peer, and it behaves at a technical level, at the protocol, so much like internet connections. Like, you actually make hops across servers to reach your destination. You establish a connection which is persistent until, you know, you want to close it. And, you know, even if you're, you know, you have your modem at home, like, even if you boot it down and boot it back up, your Lightning service, your ISP, your internet service provider, will give you the same IP address, if you'll ever know, if you ever, like, actually check your home IP address. It's usually leased to you for a very extended amount of time. In fact, it usually doesn't change. As a technician who actually worked for a network just like that, it's funny the headache you actually have to go through to get that IP address changed. And, you know, that's very similar to, like, a public key situation. And the breadth of, like, the ability to expand that to so many things. Like, once you start with that kind of fundamental element, the underlying communication protocol, and you're able to scale it to millions of users and actually onboard and potentially onboard tons and tons of people in a very short amount of time. There's a great talk by Alex Bosworth talking about, I think it was mentioning, like, the aggregation of channel opening and channel closes, and, like, how you could actually do that, and the level of compression, the level of capacity you could actually get in really bulking these things together, and that you could onboard users by the millions literally in a matter of hours. It's exactly that sort of thing that I think will have a major difference in, like, as we get to that UX phase where the user experience truly is just seamless. And we're getting there. We're getting there. I know I've said this so many times on the show before for, you know, a handful of other reads and in articles and, you know, conversations, is just that it, every single day that goes by, it gets a little bit easier. I have fewer and fewer problems. I literally don't remember the last time I had a payment, like, not go through. I mean, I'm also aware of my limits, you know, so, like, when I only have $50,000 left in liquidity in my Breeze, which, like I said just a minute ago, I really need to make a big fat channel with my BTC Pay server, so that I have a lot more capacity. But outside of the sheer liquidity limitations, which I almost never run into, just because, you know, I'm usually not spending $200 on Lightning. I'm usually spending $20, $40, and I'm bouncing back between wallets. I don't have, it works. It continues to work, and it's so much easier. Like, I'm just scanning an invoice, I'm paying. I mean, I'm sure a lot of you guys have seen that video that JC and I did with, you know, a couple other of the crew from the Raleigh Bitcoin Meetup. And, you know, we just went around town. We spent stuff. I use Fold. I've got Breeze and Zap now. I've got Strike. Like Roy says in this article, I think we're looking for that thing that is going to bring in users, and kind of get us to that next stage. And I don't know what it is, but the amount of utility that could be provided in Lightning, the number of services. And he mentioned, and one of those really big things that I think could play a really important role is encrypted chat apps, because those things are really taking off. They're becoming a really critical part of our communications infrastructure, and so many people are more concerned about having encrypted messaging than have ever been before. And to be able to extend that to Lightning, or to utilize the Lightning infrastructure to actually make that happen. Again, Sphinx has been working amazingly. I've now got it on my, I actually now have it on desktop as well. So Signal, I've actually had a huge problem getting my my mobile and my desktop to sync with each other, which was a little bit annoying. I truly expected Sphinx, when I downloaded the desktop version, to have some sort of a issue or have to download some key, you know, like scan something or like transfer something and go through some sort of confirmation service. I didn't know what I was going to have to do, but I truly expected it to be a headache. But it was funny, I booted it up and just said add node, and one of the options was import. It just automatically saw that in my keychain I had a backup key for my mobile Sphinx app. And it immediately just imported. I just clicked on it and it imported and it synced, and I was good to go. And as soon as I punched in something on my desktop, it showed up on my mobile, and vice versa. Like, it has just worked completely seamlessly. And I've still got like 20,000 sats or something in this app, because I'm in part of a group that I have to pay 10 sats every time I send a message. But it's fascinating what the potential of this protocol. Like, this could be the first steps, the building blocks to a Web 3.0, to one where we truly speak the same monetary language, where we can have monetary applications, where we have open finance in a way that anybody can build on top of it, and there are no limitations on access to this liquidity network that is global, that is private, that's more private than Bitcoin. Like, that is one of the most fascinating things about this, is it's natively encrypted. It is onion routed. And so many people, I think, have discounted the incredible potential of just getting privacy back by using Lightning to handshake certain information, to send messaging, to send payments, and not having that permanent record of who got sent what. And then potentially being able to coin join or mix and aggregate and batch the opening and closing of Lightning channels. And then the potential of having Taproot later, where channels themselves are indistinguishable from anything else. Like, they don't, like, all of the Bitcoin, all of the Bitcoin base layer transactions look the same. Just, there's so much happening right now. And I think, I truly think that there is a new internet here. There is a new wave that is coming, and we are seeing the infrastructure phase of that. And Breeze is one of those things that's really helping to push along that user experience and really helping to simplify how to make this work, how to make this a reality. And this got a lot of little fun history things about the internet, about good old Licklider, Joseph Licklider, the first ideation of the internet, the intergalactic computer network. I hadn't thought about that in a long time, but that's such a fascinating idea. And when I love that he I love that he actually put that comment of at least four large computers, because this was like his grand idea. So, like, imagine how great the intergalactic computer network could be, that we could have four big computers on it. And I just thought that was hilarious. There's a great, did he link to it, or did I think I just watched it recently. I don't think he's linking to it. I'll add it though. Cause I've got it open here somewhere around here. It's a Digital Democracy by Carl Miller. It's a TEDx talk in Athens. And now there's a lot of things that I don't agree with this talk, but it's a really fascinating discussion of how the internet was could potentially have saved, or excuse me, could the potential that it had to change the world, and more importantly, how it could change governance. And he actually mentions Bitcoin at the end and the incredible potential, how it is actually creating the foundation and the rules, the consensus rules of new networks and new systems. And I think Lightning is a huge part of that. I truly think Lightning is going to be iterated on to solve so many of the problems. At least, I mean, we talked about in the last episode that even, you know, small payments on Lightning are, you know, trusted to some degree. And I'm trusting Breeze to forward my payments in a sense. I mean, they don't really know where they're going, so it's not as if they could just blacklist someone that I'm sending it to. And they're onion routed, you know, like it's a inherently private protocol, and I have a
roughly full node in the neutrino sense of it. If you haven't listened to this episode, you don't know, then you know, don't worry about it. But essentially, I am getting a significant level of privacy in being able to source all of the information myself rather than having to ask Breeze for any critical information, like having to actually ask their node. In doing so, I have a huge degree of independence from them. And if they were, you know, trying to stop my payments, they would just have to want to stop my payments altogether. But obviously, it's I don't have to use them. I have no reason to use their channel except for the fact that they're providing me a good service. They're a great route into the network. I could just as easily use my BTC Pay server, which I intend to do. Set up my own server, have a big fat connection into the Lightning Network with lots of liquidity, and I just go to town. I connect my wallets to that, which is potentially that's kind of my goal to move later. Is to actually do that. And you know, that could even be a reality of, like, you know, in a household or in a family, like, to split up wallets. Everybody connects to one node, and that node is your personal bank, your little payments and Bitcoin infrastructure, for your house, for your family or your community, whatever it is. And there's so many applications for this. I'm crazy, crazy eager to see as these things unfold. Like, we're watching something massive happen. And the Bitcoin is absolutely at the heart of this. And I think Lightning is crucial to these next steps of development, to the next step of the growth of the infrastructure of this network, and will create liquidity markets. Regardless of what the perceived trust is of an HTLC payment right now, I have had no problems with any of them, and they work. Simple fact of the matter, I can send 10 sats. I do it all the time. I do it for stupid little crap, like, you know, drawing pixels on some one of the many different, like, little things where you can draw pictures or whatever, and you pay by the pixel, like one sat per pixel. I don't know why I play those stupid little things, but I do. And I would actually, again, like, you know, some of the articles and stuff that I would read, like New York Times or some crap, you know, they constantly put me up in front of a paywall. They're like I want to read some article, and they're like, oh, you got to subscribe for $30 a month. This is some place I don't ever read. I'm like, $30 a month? That means I am paying $30 to read your article right now. I don't like paywalls, but I would pay 15 cents to read an article. Like, I am interested enough to go there and click on that. And if I could just click a QR code or click a payment thing and send 15 sats through the Sphinx app, through my Breeze app, literally, if it was connected to my browser and I could just click on it and it worked, I would do it. I would do it to read the article. But I am never going to subscribe to your stupid thing for one article for $30 a month. Like, it blows my mind. Did they even have anybody read the article that way? You limit your reach to such a tiny audience. And I don't know. It seems so crazy to me that we haven't solved this problem. And there's always the element of the cognitive costs, the cost of having the user have to decide whether or not it's worth it. The Szabo has a great piece. What's that called? The mental costs of micropayments or something like that. That is not the name of it. That's like the theme of the article. I'll see if I can't find it and remember what it's called. I'll try to drop it in the show notes if you want to, if you want to read it, or excuse me, if you want to listen to it, or if you don't read it. But I still think there's something really strong there, something ripe for disruption. I think the fact that that model works at all from a subscription basis means that there is definitely potential with paywall. That, you know, if I read 7 articles from a place, you know, every month or something like that, if it's more or if it's less for the subscription than it would be to pay for those 7 articles, maybe I would subscribe. Like, I might subscribe to, I don't know, Bitcoin Magazine or something. Like, I read them all the time. But I really hope that stays free because I don't want to have to pay for I like stuff for free. But anyway, I've been really excited about Lightning. I've been talking about it a lot lately. And I feel like it's had a new wave of really tackling that user experience problem. And Breeze has been at the heart of that. So I've been staying up with Roy and the blog with Breeze. Because always got some really great writings, and we've read a lot of different places. We've read a lot of different articles from their Medium page. So highly, highly recommended. There's a number of things that we have not read. So if you want to go exploring, there's plenty other to dig into. About, you know, Breeze has their point of sale mode that came out not too long ago. They talk about like where different sources of centralization are on the Lightning Network, why they matter and how to mitigate them and that sort of thing. There's just a lot to dig into if you want. So I will link to the actual, to the main Medium page so that you can explore that if you want to read some of those other articles. And again, don't forget, I have the bullish case for Bitcoin coming soon. I have already opened up a file and started recording. So get ready for that. It's a long one, but if you have not heard it, it's absolutely crucial that you do. It is a must read, must listen in this space by Vijay Boyapati. So with that, thank you so much for listening. A thank you to Roy Scheinfeld and Breeze.technology. Just for having an awesome tool. It's always great writing, always really fascinating insight, and a hell of a wallet. So I'll keep shilling that shit for free. that I will catch you guys over the weekend. Hope you all have a wonderful weekend, and I'll catch you back here on Monday with another episode of Bitcoin Audible. If you're not stacking, if you're not stacking sats automatically, I don't know what you're doing. You are wasting so much potential. The next 2 years, 3 years are going to be insane in this space. You've got to stack early, stack while it's low, get your Bitcoin savings plan working automatically for you so that you don't have to mess with it at swanbitcoin.com/guy. And you'll also get $10 free worth of sats straight out the gate for free. SwanBitcoin.com/guy. Support the show and support your Bitcoin future. And lastly, discount code CC for your BitBlockBoom tickets. That'll get you 30% off. Please don't pay full price. Get that offer code. Come out to BitBlockBoom. Come out to Texas and hang out with me. Let's get a drink, talk about some Bitcoin, and have a grand old time at the Bitcoin Maximalist Conference. Offer code CC is a 30% discount. That'll do us. We will close this one out. I love you all. Thank you for listening to Bitcoin Audible. I am Guy Swan, and until next time, take it easy, everybody.